Now, over at NBC, that network is taking a big gamble on one of the new shows it's premiering this week. It's an adaptation of the British show Prime Suspect. American audiences were riveted by the original show with Helen Mirren as an unflinching homicide detective. Fans have wondered why a remake is even necessary. NPR's Neda Ulaby tracks Prime Suspect's move from Scotland Yard to the New York City Police Department.
Grim and unglamorous are probably not the words that spring to mind when you think of Helen Mirren. But as Detective Chief Inspector Jane Tennyson, she was a character defined by hard edges.
So I need a squad car and a driver, and I want access to all items taken from the victim's bedsitter, and I want to re-interview the landlady.
Other shows about tough older women cops soon followed. The Closer, The Killing, and, once again, Prime Suspect. This time with an American swagger and an American star, Maria Bello.
As of now, our prime suspect is a guy we haven't met. A guy who lives in the neighborhood or works in the neighborhood or both. A guy who was part of the scenery until suddenly he's not.
The new prime suspect, like the old one, features rape, murder, and sexism from fellow officers.
So do you want to explain to me how it is that you have a case and I don't?
Well, you see, Jane, when a bad man does a murder and someone calls the police, you see, the responding officer then will call his sergeant, and then that sergeant will then call a homicide detective.
Jane actually gets undermined more in the older British version. Predictably, the American prime suspect is much more slick, with fancy helicopter shots, bouncy music, and better-looking actors. Maria Bello is gold to Helen Mirren's steel. She struts around in a black fedora. But of course, Maria Bello's real challenge is filling Helen Mirren's shoes.
When people talk about the shoe thing, I always say, I think we have different size shoes.
I think people watch the original Prime Suspect fundamentally because they could not take their eyes off of Helen Mirren playing that part.
Sarah Aubrey is the new Prime Suspect's executive producer. She says what Maria Bello has in common with Helen Mirren is a kind of unpredictability as an actor.
There's a slight naughtiness to her and an irreverence. So it's not this kind of relentlessly dark, ultra-serious pursuit of justice with a capital J.
Instead, she's the sort of detective who casually intimidates her boyfriend's controlling ex-wife over dinner.
I've never been shot, but I have been stabbed, and I got lie thrown in my face once. And I'm a homicide detective, Trish, not a policeman or a policewoman.
It was important to the producers to have a female head writer. Alexandra Cunningham is standing in the Prime Suspect's writer's room in Los Angeles.
This is where the magic happens.
All the other writers there were guys. Upstairs, Cunningham squeezed on a couch with Maria Bello. They said they had to fight the American impulse to make Prime Suspect too earnest.
Right. We didn't want to be the typical dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah. We speak for the dead.
Yeah.
Like, we know. Like, there's been a lot of procedurals. We get it.
To adapt Prime Suspect for U.S. primetime, Cunningham made all kinds of changes, including the name of the main character. British Jane Tennyson is now Irish-American Jane Timoney.
Because, you know, Helen Mirren's always going to be Jane Tennyson, which is fine because she deserves to be, but Maria deserves to be her own character is why I changed the last name.
And it took me about 20 takes to say my name for the first time.
What was less hard was capturing the self-possession and persistence that drew Maria Bello to the role.
Suspect is headed south on 4th Avenue and 21st. Detective Timoney in pursuit.
Bello's very favorite scene in the first episode comes right after a chase down a dark, dumpster-choked alley. She's attacked and graphically beaten before other cops come to her rescue. Bello says this is when you really see her character's refusal to back down.
When Jane is laying there and you think she's could be dying, and the cop says, you know, you are right, and she just says, do you have a cigarette, and spits. I think that's so her. Like, she's just keeps on plowing through. No matter what happens, she gets up on her feet and keeps walking. I like that.
That's what writer Alexandra Cunningham wants, for Americans to like Jane Timoney, enough to stop comparing her to the original.
I feel like that is a difference between our show and the original, is that Helen Mirren was never going to get in a beatdown with someone.
While the show's braced for a beatdown from Prime Suspect's most loyal fans, they won't be getting one from Helen Mirren. Producers say she's given the new show her blessing. Neda Ulaby, NPR News.
I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later, I have a few thoughts. That's my Can I Just Tell You commentary, and it's coming up in just a few minutes. But first, let's talk about the Emmys. Last night was the 63rd annual Primetime Emmy Awards, which is supposed to recognize excellence in primetime television. Here to talk about the highs, lows, and surprises last night, as well as what we can expect from the upcoming television season. With us once again, Eric Dagans. He's the TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times. And also with us, Makisha Madden-Toby. She's the TV critic and writer for the Detroit News. Welcome back to you both. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Well, we have to talk about the host. This year, it was actress Jane Lynch, nominated for Outstanding Actress in a Comedy Series for her work on Glee. This is one of her more talked-about moments from last night. Here it is.
You know, a lot of people are very curious why I'm a lesbian. Ladies and gentlemen, the cast of Entourage.
Eric, I have to be honest. I wasn't curious. Was anybody?
It's a joke.
Okay. Well, how do you think she did?
I thought she was a really game sort of trying. She gave a really great effort with a lot of really mediocre material. I felt like the writers of that show should be banned from Hollywood for a year. There should be a fatwa on the writers of the Emmys. They really ill-served her, and a lot of the jokes just fell flat. And she's an amazing comic performer, and the fact that the show was even, that the non-awards parts were watchable
was due to her.
Was a testament to her ability. Yeah.
Makisha, you were there. Did it feel the same way there, that it was kind of meh?
Yeah,
except for her.
There were a lot of groans. Well, actually, there were groans for her, too. I mean, it was just awkward. There were so many awkward moments, and I felt for her. And there was the one joke she told that was really funny. And just to prove to you how much, like, people wanted her to be funny, when she told that joke, it was about actors doing television and then television actors doing voices and video games. People were, like, cheering for her. Like, thank you for finally being funny and delivering in a way that we knew that you could, and you weren't.
And that was late in the show,
and
too,
that was
man.
Late. That was By late. Then, I'm sure most people had tuned up.
Yeah.
Or watching football. Another thing that everybody seemed to be talking about was this group that did the musical interludes between performances. They were called the Emmy Tones. And at one point, the actor and the rapper LL Cool J lent a hand. I'll just play a little bit. Here it is.
Many series and movies sure make great TV. Wouldn't you agree?
Yo, minis and movie series. Who's gonna win tonight? I know you got your theories. Well, listen up. We're gonna answer all your queries. One winner. The rest of them are looking teary. Movies, 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 movies and miniseries. Movies, 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 movies and miniseries. Lights, cameras, action.
Okay.
I got to say, I was headed to the kitchen to make my sandwich, and I stopped. I actually stopped for a minute. And then when he was done, I went and made my sandwich.
Makisha, what did you think?
I just felt bad for him. I don't know whose idea that was. It's just not him anymore. You know, he's not that guy. Why is he yelling? It's just,
I don't know.
It was just,
I don't know.
See, I
felt like
him
such
to
an
do,
old person.
I wanted
like,
him to do.
Why are you yelling?
I wanted him to do every transition. I wanted to hold, I wanted him to come out and beat up the Emmy Tones. That's what I wanted to have.
I don't know. It's kind of Vegas, and I don't know.
It was forced.
It was
That's
forced.
What it was.
It was.
Everything at the Emmys is forced, though.
Well, in terms of actual awards, though, Modern Family cleaned up, scoring 5. Makisha, what did you think? Was it deserved?
For the most part. I mean, I think it bodes well for broadcast TV. That's a good sign, right? Because so long, cable kept winning everything, and it's good to see a broadcast show that people really like do really well. I just felt like, did they deserve all of them? I mean, Ty Burrell, of all of the cast members on that show, I would argue that he's not the strongest. I mean, not that I wasn't rooting against him or anything. I just wanted Ed O'Neill to win it, I guess. But I mean, overall, I guess they deserved it for best comedy, if nothing else, definitely.
Eric, what'd you think? Deserved?
Well, I think Modern Family, yeah, is a great show, but it's also a great show that Emmy really loves. And this was sort of Modern Family's coming out party. Modern Family's coming out party got dimmed a little bit last year by Glee and some other shows, but this time they just ruled everything.
For people who aren't familiar with it, tell us a little bit about it and what you think the appeal is and why you think the Emmy judges liked it so much.
Sure, it's a situation comedy about three couples that are all related. So you have a father who's married to a younger woman. And then one of his kids is gay and has a family. And then another one of his kids is married to Ty Burrell's character, and he's kind of a doofus. And so they all kind of bounce off each other in this really odd, really wonderful, you know, modern family, you know.
And it's diverse in many
ways.
Diverse.
It's diverse. The older guy is married to a Colombian woman who's much younger. There's a gay couple, and the traditional couple is struggling, you know, with everything that we're struggling with.
And the gay couple has an Asian child.
You're right, exactly. So it's racially diverse, it's culturally diverse, it's age diverse. It's and what it is too is Stephen Levitan is somebody who's done a lot of great work in Hollywood for a long time. A lot of people like him. He's a good guy, and he has a great creative history. He's done a lot of good work, and a lot of these actors have done a lot of good work. You talk about Ed O'Neill, you know, from Married with Children all the way through to some of his dramatic work. People have really liked him a lot. So you know, Hollywood loves this show. I mean, strong gay characters. Hollywood loves strong gay characters now. So there's just a lot of reasons why Hollywood loves this show. And like I said, it had its coming out party. And it's deserved. I mean, there were other great... I mean, I was surprised that Steve Carell in his last season in The Office didn't win an Emmy for his comic performance, which frankly I thought was better than the guy who won.
And Jim Parsons, who won, was even surprised.
Yeah, yeah. He said a lot of people told him he wasn't going to win, and I'm sure he thought that.
His mother told him that, he said, backstage.
His mother, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well.
So, you know, so I thought, you know, I thought maybe this might be Steve Carell's time. And Louis C.K., you know, everybody thinks that show's very hip. Louis on FX, he also didn't win, so... It was a surprise in a way, but it was, you know, it wasn't like people who were awful got awards. It was just, you know, a little different.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about last night's primetime Emmy Awards with TV and media critic from the St. Petersburg Times, Eric Dagans, and TV and writer for the Detroit News, Makisha Madden-Toby. Makisha used the word awkward earlier. Perhaps you agree with me that the appearance of Charlie Sheen presenting the award for outstanding lead actor in a comedy series was awkward.
That was some outstanding acting right there.
Do we need to revisit why Charlie Sheen, just saying the two words Charlie Sheen, makes you kind of feel things?
Wince. You get nervous.
Warlock.
Well, here it is. I want to play a little bit from his from him last night. Here it is.
Before I present... outstanding lead actor in a comedy series, my old category. I want to take a moment to get something off my chest and say a few words to everybody here from Two and a Half Men. From the bottom of my heart, I wish you nothing but the best for this upcoming season.
Okay. Couldn't he have sent them a nice card? I don't know, Eric. I don't know. What is that? Maybe that's why we watched. Maybe that's why we
came from the bottom of his lawyer's briefcase. you know, Charlie Sheen has been on an apology tour of sorts. He was on the Today Show last week, and he was trying to explain, you know, why he lost his mind earlier this year. It's interesting to see him try to explain that without admitting that, you know, his addictions got out of control, which is what a lot of people think happened. But he is trying to redeem himself in Hollywood, and I guess this was part of it. I was kind of surprised that Emmy not only had him come on and do that, but they also had the two other guys from Two and a Half Men, Ashton Kutcher, who took his character's place in a way, and John Cryer, his old co-star. They also presented. They didn't really reference that Charlie was there, which I thought was kind of weird. And it seemed like Emmy was trying to cash in on this weird, sordid, you know, awful thing that's been, you know, Hollywood's focus for the last 6 months.
Sure. Well, speaking of that, there are a couple things we do want to make sure that we talk about in the time that we have left. Makisha, I wanted to ask you about this article that was published on AOL TV recently about the number of women writers that TV is losing. It said that according to the Writers Guild of America, over the last 12 years, there's been a sharp decline in the number of women writers, and that the wage gap for these women has nearly quadrupled, despite the fact that women make up a majority of the television audience. Why do we think that is?
I read that article, and I was really fascinated by that. And it talked a lot about the economy and how the old school thought is that men support families and that women don't, and that if it comes down to a man or a woman writer, that they go with a man. It still didn't explain the disparity in terms of wage, but... I just found that to be disheartening, and it's reflective, I think, though, in what we are seeing on television. I mean, a lot of these shows this fall feel really insecure and strange. There are all these shows about men who are like the new women and men are threatened. And like, who's writing this? And I don't think it's women. And if you look at the numbers, it's not.
Well, think about this. Speaking of which, Erica, we have a couple minutes left to talk about the Playboy Club. It debuts tonight. It's about the infamous Playboy Club in Chicago in 1963. And it's already gotten a lot of attention. Like Gloria Steinem, for example, whose breakout piece as a writer was when she went undercover or as a Playboy bunny. And her take on it was that it's just tacky, that this idea that this was something glamorous and exciting was just not true. It's just, it was tacky. But what I've been intrigued by is that they're doing a big push on Bunny Brenda, who plays the black bunny in the club. Do I have time to play this clip? Let me just play this short clip. And Eric, you got to tell me how to feel. Here it is.
Well, Brenda is a smart girl. She's very strong, she's level-headed, and I think she's a big dreamer.
I'm going to be the first chocolate centerfold.
I am.
You can't discriminate against these babies.
And these babies are what Oprah euphemistically calls the cousins, for those who
the
aren't
girls.
With the girls. Now, yes. But then they're trying to make this out to be some civil rights thing. You know, this is like some big blow for. So, Eric, talk to me.
We always see this in Hollywood. Makisha knows what we're talking about. We've sat through the same stupid press conferences.
Oh, God.
They present a show about Playboy, and they try to pretend that A, it's not overly sexual, and B, it's not exploitive to women, which is nonsense. And so they twist themselves in knots to try and make those points on screen, and the show ends up being about nothing. And frankly, that's what's happened with the Playboy Club so far. We've just seen one episode. But the women, the Playboy bunnies in the show, don't even have last names. So don't tell me that this is about empowerment, okay? And don't tell me this is about the black bunny finding herself as a chocolate bunny because that's her only option in the world. I have a feeling that women like Rosa Parks found another way to make an impact in the world other than wearing satin bikinis.
But as far as diversity, clubs. Eric, in the 30 seconds or so, is that pretty much it for racial diversity this season? Is that it?
We have to wait until mid-season in January to see the one lone fall network show that is starring a person of color, Scandal with Kerry Washington. It's actually, I thought it was pretty good. I don't know what you thought about it, Makisha, but
I wanted it to be better.
Okay, well, guess what? There's always football.
Yeah, a lot of diversity there.
That's right. That was Eric Dagans, TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times. Also with us, Makisha Madden-Toby, TV critic and writer for the Detroit News. Eric was with us from St. Petersburg, Florida. And Makisha joined us from our studios at NPR West. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
TV networks are also struggling in a changing marketplace. Some hope to capture viewers by dipping into the past. TV critic Eric Dagans has been watching two new shows, The Playboy Club and Pan Am.
By 1960 standards, Maureen has a pretty good setup. She's a young, pretty blonde, fresh in from Fort Wayne, Indiana, with a job at the coolest night spot in town, Chicago's Playboy Club.
But I built a place in the toddling town where everything was perfect.
But she's also a symbol of what ails NBC's The Playboy Club. It's a transparent homage to the Mad Men era of Rat Pack songs and sleek suits.
And fantasies became realities for everyone who walked through the door.
The opening even features narration and an implied blessing from Playboy founder Hugh Hefner himself. But for all its nostalgic glamour, NBC's Playboy Club is stuck between its roots in a male-dominated fantasy and the reality of women's prominence in modern television. Because we're watching it in 2011, Playboy Club has female characters argue for bunny work as empowerment, the best option for an ambitious woman in a troubled world. An African-American self-described chocolate bunny explains this to Maureen.
Honey, I'm just saying, life is always going to be rough out there. But we're in here. We're at the party. And the party just started.
But because this is also about the Playboy life, these women's jobs and success depend on serving and pleasing men. Worst of all, because this is network TV, the show commits a cardinal sin in Hugh Hefner's hedonistic universe. It isn't sexy. You heard right. NBC made a show about the Playboy Club that has almost no actual sex in it. That's not a problem for ABC's Pan Am. Here, the airline stewardesses emerge as the ultimate symbol of button-down beauty as the camera lingers on their wide eyes, occasional cleavage, and tight skirts. It's a decidedly male vision that at times seems sexier than anything the Playboy Club has to offer. But it's also beauty which comes at a price, as new flight attendant Laura soon discovers. She lands on the wrong side of the airline's grouchy stewardess wrangler, who ruthlessly enforces a detailed dress code.
And are you wearing your girdle?
Yes, ma'am. Oh.
There's a rip in your stocking.
Yes, I know. Can you help me? My flight leaves in less than an hour.
Here, the nostalgia on tap is for the jet age. The first time you could fly a plane anywhere in the world on an hour's notice, with more legroom than you find in today's airport lounges. So what if the only way for a woman to get ahead in this world is by serving drinks in the sky, enduring girdle checks, and fleeing oppressive marriages? In the end, both Pan Am and the Playboy Club attempt the same balancing act that Mad Men actually pulls off. They bask in the sexy glamour of the 1960s while also exploring its oppressive reality. But for these series to work, they need to dig deeper, moving beyond the superficial glitz of a time when too many people's lives were unfairly limited. Otherwise, the Playboy Club and Pan Am will celebrate a time when women had less freedom and less power. That's a history lesson no one needs to learn.
Eric Deggans is the TV critic for the St. Petersburg Times, and you were just listening to him on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Almost as long as there's been Hollywood, there's been the Hollywood Tour.
And here's the home of Gary Cooper here in Brentwood. On your left there, you can be seeing the Doors taken from the church from where he was married.
Well, here's a new twist from the gossip site TMZ. For today's scandal-infatuated celeb watchers, there is now the TMZ tour of Hollywood. NPR's Ben Bergman was not too proud to ride along.
Every day, as many as seven times a day, a seat on the TMZ tour can be had for just $49 and a few hours of your life.
It's so good of you to join us on this magic ride we like to call TMZ Tours.
In addition to this blaring soundtrack, the tour includes a guide, Keith Jordan, who could easily be mistaken for a drive-time radio host. He's actually the most cliched of all Hollywood cliches, the struggling actor.
We're going to go out where the celebrities actually go to on a day-to-day basis, okay? Where they eat, where they shop, where they party, where they play.
As we get underway, Jordan tells the half-empty bus to be on the lookout. We'll be traveling through prime celebrity habitat.
Okay, so if we see anybody while we're on this tour, guys, I want you to shout out to me. Say, Keith, oh my God, there's a famous person out there. I'm going to jump out of the bus with this camera, and I'm going to get an interview with that celebrity. I hit a button on here, that footage uploads directly to TMZ. Immediately.
The first stop on the tour is an iconic Hollywood hotel.
First up, the Roosevelt Hotel, home to Teddy's Nightclub, one of Lindsay Lohan's favorite hangouts, probably because her ex-girlfriend Samantha Ronson DJs here. Now for those of you under 50, the Roosevelt is where the Hills had their finale party.
The Roosevelt is also where the first Academy Awards were held in 1929. But no time to mention that here. We're off to the El Pollo Loco fast food restaurant where Brad Pitt used to work, then the comedy club where Michael Richards went on a racist rant, which of course TMZ posted for all the world to see.
I drive all over LA, and every time I drive around, I look and I see all these places that TMZ made famous.
Harvey Levin is the founder of TMZ, which has made him a minor celebrity. He says he's been obsessed with starting a tour for years.
It just seemed to me these old line, stodgy Hollywood tours, you know, that let people know what happened in the 1920s in Hollywood, you know, we could do a tour about what's going on now and what the people care about now.
On particularly dull stretches of the tour, there is a game where passengers guess whether a celebrity smiled at the camera or held up the middle finger. Still, Levin argues virtually everyone he puts on TMZ benefits from being there.
This is a city that it's all about selling tickets. It's all about keep me relevant, make my song relevant, make sure that people watch my show.
On your right, the place where your favorite celeb you spawn are born, Cedars-Sinai Hospital.
We're coming to the end of our two-hour voyage, and despite the tour guide's best efforts to keep everyone upbeat, it's felt like a fishing trip where you don't catch any fish. Not a single celebrity sighted, not even a D-lister. But then, a tug on the line.
Wait, wait, wait! Say hi, Ryan Felipe! Don't drive away!
Our driver stops in the middle of the road, attempting to box in the star of Cruel Intentions and The Lincoln Lawyer.
No way out!
Somehow, the actor finds an opening and speeds away.
Say hi to TMZ!
For those watching from the bus, it's a great show. They have quite a story to tell when they get home, and more importantly, the spectacle they just witnessed might end up on TMZ. Still, Alicia Moretto, visiting from Australia, was hoping for more.
I wanted to see a lot more celebrities, but we can't really force them to come out.
That's right. Unfortunately, TMZ still hasn't devised a way to force the famous out of hiding. Ben Bergman, NPR News, Los Angeles.
You're listening to All Things Considered.